Fred, what have you done now?
And we are here with the two screenwriters for the new film, Marvel's The Eternals, which is out right now. I saw the film on a Sunday evening. Completely loved it, guys. Ryan and Kaz join us right now. Ryan, Kaz, how y'all doing?
Very glad to be here. Thanks, Brad.
Hey, no, thanks for doing the show. I mean, let's talk about it. It's out now. You know, I think that this is probably the number one thing about being involved with a Marvel project is you know all these juicy secrets and details, and you can't say anything under penalty of perjury, and I'm sure something worse than that. So, Kaz, just talk to me first. How's it feel for it to finally be out?
Yeah, man. I mean, telling these kinds of stories, especially on this scope and scale, it's a childhood dream for us. Ryan and I have been making movies, you know, in our parents' backyard since we were little kids. So to be able to tell a crazy intergalactic space immortal epic, you know, that's just one of the great honors of our life as storytellers. It really is.
And Ryan, same thing for you?
Yeah, I mean, like you were saying, that when we first got Eternals, there was a period of probably about like 6 months-ish where we were working on it and couldn't even tell our friends. So we were just be busy working on a script, and they had no idea that it had anything to do with Marvel. So it's really exciting, and especially because of the pandemic, it got delayed a year. So it's really great to finally share it with the world. And like Kaz was saying, we were independent filmmakers before this. And we were used to kind of making movies that would just get sort of like these small little releases, and that would be that. So to see a movie that you helped create released on such a big scale and connect to such a huge audience is just it's mind blowing.
So y'all are working on Eternals. You can't say anything. You're writing these drafts of the scripts. I'm sure you've had to save them under some sort of code name, right? Was there a code name for the scripts? What were they?
All right, if we get sniped by the Marvel snipers, I feel like this is okay now because the movie is literally out. So, yeah, it was a very interesting code name. I actually tried to code name it as Mount Olympus. They were like, that's too obvious. I literally put it on one of the scripts, and they're like, you can't do that. It's too obvious. Everyone's going to guess. So I'm pretty sure it's a Seinfeld reference. Ryan, I'll let you drop this one because you actually watch Seinfeld.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'll just say it. It was called Sack Lunch was the code name. Yeah.
It's unappetizing of a thing. Like if you saw that on a slate or like on a poster, you'd be like, oh yeah, they're shooting Sack Lunch here. You'd be like, I'm going to go the other direction and go and, you know, play on my phone. Cause there's no way I'm going to be investigating.
Yeah, that's the design. Yeah. but yeah, that's a Seinfeld reference. It's on like I think a marquee in one of the episodes. It's really, really inside. You would have to really know Seinfeld well to catch that reference.
Okay, so I'm always fascinated because I'm sure you had to do a multitude of things to keep this property and this script and this story under wraps. Let's just talk about how you got on this, because I find this whole Blacklist thing to be so interesting. I've really started to figure out about it the last couple of years. You know, we had Michael Waldron on, who was obviously writing in the Marvel Universe, creator Heels on Stars. But, you know, he was on this Blacklist. So tell me about it. What is this mystical thing?
It's not as mythical or mystical as you think. We can thank Franklin Leonard, just a legendary Hollywood guy, for making this thing happen. Essentially, Ryan and I, we didn't have agents, we didn't have managers, we didn't have like the uncle that we could call that would get us into town. And we really just went to a cabin in the woods one day. I called the best writer I knew, who I happened to be related to. And I said, like, let's write a movie that we can make for like $500,000. Like, bring a small indie budget. We'll go make this movie in like Eastern Europe, and we'll just like become filmmakers, not just guys who want to make movies. And so we literally went into the woods and wrote this script called Ruin, which was like a World War II Western revenge story. It's very dark, it's gritty, it's a drama. And we wrote this script, and through literally the most tenuous circumstance, a friend's sister's fiance, we were introduced to a manager, Sam Warren and Harry Langsfield, who basically changed our lives. And they loaded the script into a shotgun, blasted it all over town. And that ended up landing us on the top of the Blacklist. And really what the Blacklist is, I think they define this, is it's the most popular script in Hollywood that hasn't been made yet. So it really, it's about supporting writers. It's a writer-led sort of executive-decided list that just lifts people up and says, hey, look, this is good. Let's share it, you know, let's talk about it. And that's something that really caught the attention of Nate Moore and Kevin over at Marvel. And I want to say the rest is history, but it was certainly a lot of hoops and hurdles and conversations and long talks into the late night to get to where we are now. But yeah, that's really what started it. So got a lot of love for those guys.
When and how many? I mean, how long did it take, Ryan? I guess from the first time that Feige and his folks over at Marvel reached out to y'all to okay, you got the job. Like, how many meetings? How many talks are we talking?
Yeah, we came in and Nate told us all about Eternals, and we had never heard of it, like many people. But right away, we just knew that this is what we had to do. It just there was so much overlap with our personal interests and the things that we wanted to explore in movies. So it became just essentially like our holy grail project that we just put everything into. And so I think from that meeting, there was a period of about like 4-ish weeks where we built a pitch and we went in and would kind of do sort of practice pitches with Nate and this really brilliant executive over at Marvel, Zoe Nagelhut. And I think we did about 2 or 3 of those meetings, and they helped us kind of refine the pitch. And then after like 4 or 5 weeks of that, we went in and pitched Lou and Kevin. And it was like, we did it like in the Iron Man room at the end of this giant conference table with all this like Iron Man artwork all around us. And they just kind of sat there.
Robert Downey Jr. Like, is just staring over your shoulder.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you better do well. But they just sat there totally poker faced, totally stone faced the whole time, and just really could not get a good read on them. Kaz felt very confident, actually, but I was kind of like, I don't know how that went. But yeah, that period was about maybe like 5 or 6 weeks. And then really within like days of doing that pitch, they gave us the call, and it was the call that changed our lives, really.
And so I guess it was 2019. I pitched a book. Like, I wanted to write a book, and I pitched it to a publisher, and then they gave me the green light. They said, you can go write this book. And it was so much work. You put in all this these ideas. You try to make sure it's refined. They say, yes, you can do it. And then you have this gargantuan task of, wait a minute, I have to write this now? Like, talking about it and pitching is fine. Now yeah. I actually have to write it. Was that intimidating for the two of you? I know that you've written stuff before, but now this is the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Not only is it Marvel Cinematic Universe, this is Eternals. It's a property that not a lot of people are aware of. And two, it's this sprawling epic. I mean, the Eternals is a sprawling epic. It's not this small story that happened. And I'm not saying that Iron Man was a small story, but it's like in a cave.
Sure.
And then he finds, you know what I mean? It's a smaller scale.
It's one person's journey, you know, and for Eternals, it's a story of 10. And really, if you count the Celestials and you count Crow, it's more like 12 characters you're tracking over the course of 7,000 years. No, it's absolutely intimidating, but Marvel does an incredible job of, you know, isolating and insulating you. You're just telling a story. You're a creative person in a room, and you have this incredible sandbox to play in. And just like when you're making movies with your friends, it's the same stuff, you know, and there's a great saying, this, I need to come up with a new one that isn't so vegan unfriendly, but the story, the saying goes, is how do you eat a whale? One bite at a time, you know, and that's how you make a giant movie. You know, there's a million, I think 10,000 people worked on this film. There's each one of those people making thousands of decisions. And so for us, it all starts with you outline the story and you beat out all the changes. Yeah. Who's in the movie? What do they want? What do they need? You know, and what are you trying to say? Story, and it starts like that one step at a time.
And what's that? Go ahead, Ryan.
I was just gonna say also, like, in conjunction with our script Ruin, I think the fact that we kind of didn't know, we weren't as seasoned as we are now, you know, and we didn't know the business as well as we do now, and I think that was a real advantage at the time, because it's kind of like, you know, you can't be afraid of what you don't know, basically. So we were like, we didn't know enough, I guess, to really be intimidated by the story, because to us it was just like just another story, you know. And we had cracked many stories in our lives and written a fair number of scripts, and also we saw a really clear way into this story, and we really kind of understood it. So from the beginning, it was really just about like, how do we refine what we've already been building, rather than like you're sitting there and just looking at a giant blank slate that you have no idea what to do with, you know.
Stories are like puzzles, you know. You're putting each piece together, and then the pieces make sense. They make more and more sense, you know. And once you finish the outline of the puzzle, then you can start to focus on the other, you know, the edges and the inside and the little details. And that's really what writing a script is like. And certainly when you're in the MCU, you have this incredible foundation of 25 other movies, you know, that have sort of gotten to us to this point. So for us, it was both about taking what had been built before us, doing honor and doing justice to it, but also taking us in a totally new, incredibly strange and epic new direction. And that was what we talked about from the beginning with the whole team, was this is an epic, this is a love story, and we want to do something different.
And y'all definitely did something different. I think it's the most different Marvel film that we've seen. I'm sure you've heard that before, today, but it definitely is. It's this sprawling epic, like I said before, that it's not what I expected from a Marvel movie. And I think that I mean that in the best terms possible. You know, it definitely took the MCU in a different direction. I'm always fascinated by this outlining process of writing a script, especially one like this big. Bob Gale and Bob Zemeckis, who wrote Back to the Future, I remember listening to their yes, exactly. That's what my book was about. But the way that they wrote the film was this old school kind of note card method. Okay, Marty invents rock and roll, so we have to establish Marty plays guitar, and then he invents skateboarding, so we have to show earlier in the movie that he is a skateboarder. How do you outline the process? Is it, okay, we know this is the end and we work backward? Or is it, I have these ideas, how can we weave these together?
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like, that method of using cards, it just works. Because really what you're doing is you're taking all the stuff in your mind and you're making it physical and literal and visible. And then everyone else can say, yeah, Marty does play guitar. It's the same thing with Eternals. We literally had hundreds of different colored index cards on a wall at Marvel. You know, blue ones represented flashbacks for different time periods, red ones were visions and conversations with Arishem, and white ones for the present day storyline. So we use that same method because what it lets you do is bring 5, 6, you know, brains. At that point, it was, you know, Zoe, Nate, and Ryan and I in a room for months, and we were just figuring out like how each piece of the story feeds the next. So, you know, that's the thing. You have 10 characters. You're still trying to make all those characters three-dimensional, to make them all want something and to go on this journey together. So yeah, it really does start with that and building its constituent parts.
Yeah, I think just like in totally generalized terms, when you're talking about the craft, I think most of the time you always kind of know the beginning and you know the end, and then it's just sort of how do you connect those things. And then what you really want to do to make it feel like a story that's unfolding is you just always want to have characters making choices, you know? So you're always presenting your characters with decisions, and they're making a choice that's sending them the story into a certain direction that's going to lead to that ending that you preconceived. Matt Stone and Trey Parker of South Park fame have a really great thing that they talk about, that you should always be connecting each scene with either therefore or but. And if you can keep alternating those, that's even better. So it's not like, and then this happens, and then this happens. It's this happens, therefore this happens, but then this happens, you know? So there's a causality, and there's a building process that's going to lead you to that final climax that you conceived of at the beginning.
Now, when you're working on the script, and I'm sure you're going through draft after draft after draft, did you ever feel, I don't know, any limitations put on you by containing it within the MCU? Because I'm sure Marvel's like, hey, we need to make sure there's some connective tissue here, reference Thanos, reference the blip, the snap, or who's your favorite Avenger, things of this nature. Did you feel hampered by that? Because I know as writers, it's like, let me write my story, and then we'll go from there. I definitely can tell that. Was that an issue at all for you to work that in?
For us, if anything, it was a gift. You know, you're building on this bedrock of 26 movies that people love, that people want to see, that people want to show up for, and being able to play with those expectations, to expand what's possible within those expectations, it was absolutely a gift. I think a movie like this is, you know, it's an incredibly ambitious film. It's very challenging to make apropos of, you know, of the cinematic universe. And I think that by folding it into this incredible place, we could really do justice to King Kirby, Jack Kirby's crazy, incredible ideas. You know, this is always really a love letter to one of the great creators, truly like the creator with Stan, of like everything that we love about the MCU. I mean, he drew all these characters and is responsible for that. So this is a love letter to that for sure. And it is much more what we like to say, you know, hard science fiction. It's like a true sci-fi movie that's dressed up in the guise of an epic, of a sci-fi movie, of a love story. So, you know, look, we're fans too. We actually, I think we did a marathon. We watched about 18 Marvel movies every night for 18 nights leading up to pitching Kevin. I mean, you got to do it, right? Like, you have to be fluent in the language if you're going to talk to the master. So we really did steep ourselves in that lore. And what I like to say is that these Marvel movies that, you know, people love and watch, they're really just a continuation of the same myths about gods and heroes and people with strange and dangerous powers that we've been telling for 2,000 or 3,000 years of human history. I mean, Gilgamesh is a hero from ancient Mesopotamia and Babylon, and we've been telling those same stories. I mean, Thor, that's a 1,000-year-old tale. And it's really, this is just sort of taking the baton of that lineage of storytelling and moving it into the future. So for us, it was really, I think, a diving board, not a brick wall.
Now, when I was watching the movie, there's a couple things that stuck out to me as far as writing, and I don't know if these were lines that y'all wrote or these are specific things that you implemented, but I'm just curious about it because I never thought in an MCU movie I would have not one but two references to DC characters. There's a Superman mm-hmm. reference and a Batman reference. Was that lines that y'all wrote or how did those come out? Do you know?
I actually think that was probably Patrick in the process, yeah. who we love and is fantastic. I think it was about keeping things light and just making sure that people know this is a universe where a lot can happen. It's meta, it's self-aware, it's self-referential, you know? And I think that when you start talking about Cap and Iron Man, you also want to be like, this is a universe where heroes exist, you know? And especially yeah. if you've been around for 7,000 years, I don't know if they've met Batman or if Batman is just simply a fictional character in this world.
Yeah, that's the thing, that I'm interested in. Yeah. Yeah, are they referencing like the Superman comics or the kind of Superman movie or literally Superman?
I don't totally know the answer.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, you mentioned Seinfeld earlier, and I remember watching an interview with Larry David where he was very involved, not only with the writing, he and Jerry, but also when it came to shoot night, he is on set, he's ready. If a joke doesn't work, him and the writers are all getting together, they're rewriting it. Is it a similar thing on a movie of this scale? Are y'all there, or do you just kind of turn in the script and say, okay, here you go, do with it what you will?
Right. I mean, it's really different every time, you know, and in this case, Chloe really wanted to work with a small crew, and she has her method and her approach that's been very successful and has given us some of the best movies of the last few decades. And so in this case, we handed the script off and gave them our blessing, and then they went off to make the movie. But like I said, it can go a number of different ways. In other cases, we are involved in the production. So
in particular, you know, like all these movies, especially the large scale films, I mean, they're a process of iteration. You know, they're working again yeah. and again. You know, you want to talk about punching up a moment. There's thousands of people who are like refining this set piece until it sings, until you have those moments where people cheer in an audience. You know, I've had the pleasure of watching this movie now 3 or 4 times with an audience in a crowded movie theater. And I can tell like those moments when that first laugh is going to hit in the movie and that first cheer and when people are going to cry, and like movies are, you know, they're making you feel something on this roller coaster. And so for sure, they're constantly calibrating and tweaking it. You know, we lay out the bones, we choose the characters, we decide these powers, we write the story, we write this movie, and then it goes off, and then the director puts her stamp on it, and then the editors put, you know, I have to shout out the incredible editors, Craig Wood and Dylan Tishner, who just, they spent years, you know, and literally because yeah. of the pandemic, it was supposed to be 1 year, it ended up being like a year and a half, really editing this film and crafting it again. So that's the beauty of filmmaking, is I think about 10,000 people get to put their voice into this movie. And that's such a great process for us to watch it come to life.
And I'm sure whenever you turn in this script, you've written it, you've spent months, if not years, working on it. You've refined these yeah. characters. You've gone through the note cards. You've gone through the everything. And then before they start shooting and they start casting the movie, it had to be yeah. awesome to hear names like Angelina Jolie, Salma oh, yeah. Hayek are going to be playing these characters. Because I know as a writer, you have probably – maybe, oh, would it be cool if this person plays it? But Ryan, what was kind of y'all's reaction to hearing some of the casting?
Well, that was the really cool thing. Cause like when we write, we really like to picture actors in our heads, you know, and sometimes that's just like of who could it actually be. And sometimes it's like, oh, I'm picturing Gene Hackman from the 70s and the French Connection or something like that. Cause that's what helps me capture the voice of who that character is. But a lot of times, you know, in writing these independent films, you have these ideas about who it could be, but you have no idea, like, how am I actually going to get that person? But with Marvel, it was just one after another. We'd be like, we think this could be Camille. We think this could be Selma. And then they're just like weeks later, like, oh, they're in the movie. They're in the movie. They're in the movie. So it just kept getting, it was very exciting to see the power of Marvel and the power of them as storytellers to attract these great artists. And also like really mind blowing to see the cast just get more and more stacked. You know, we're just like one after another, like, oh, and they're in the movie and they're in the movie. And it just, we got blessed with an incredible team.
This was happening too, just while we were in the room, you know, we would send.
Yeah.
So that Salma Hayek was really a conversation that we had from the beginning. We were like, only Salma has the gravitas to play this character of Ajax, to be sort of the mm-hmm. matriarch of this immortal family. I mean, you said this from the very first conversations. And I remember Nate going like, okay, so yeah, we talked to Salma and she's in. you know, I was so calm. And then we're like, oh, okay, great. So from that point forward, you know, we're writing that role just for her, you know. And there was a point where we were sitting in the writer's room and Nate, our producer, walks in and he says, like, so Angie's interested in being in the film. And we're right. like, who's Angie? And he's like, oh, Angelina Jolie. Like, and mm-hmm. is there a role for her? And we're like, well, there's an amazing role for her. And he's like, great, I'll tell her. You know, it was really this incredible process where Marvel had just come out with Endgame, you know, it's at the height of its powers. It's a very special movie with a very special director, filmmaker attached, you know. And so this was this great process in a time period where it was just like bringing in sort of this dream cast, you know, finding all these incredible people and making sure that we as the authors could really tailor it to their voice and to their character.
Well, I got to tell y'all, the movie is fantastic. It's sensational. I really enjoyed watching it. It's Eternals. It's a great different take of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I think it was also a good, these three films that came out this year in the MCU, they all kind of complement each other in a weird way. Like they're very different, but I feel like it was a nice package that was put together this year by the team at MCU. No surprise there. Disney knows what they're doing, I'm sure. But Kaz and Ryan, this is my final question to you because my time is running out. I'm sure y'all been talking about this movie, promoting this movie. You have more promotion to do after this. I always like to ask people, what's the one thing that you're waiting on an interviewer to ask you that has not been asked yet that you've been wanting to talk about from this movie? I'm sure that you're like, oh man, once they say this, I'm gonna have this great story. Is there anything that's happened yet did I capture it all? Was I able to do it in this 20 minutes?
I'll be the first to quickly say, Ryan, I'm buying him some time. You know, first of all, yes, you did a fantastic job. If this was like a great way of saying, like, is Brad Gilmore great? Yes, the answer is yes. we have a good way of being able to tell the stories we want to tell. I mean, for us, what I always like to say about this movie is, you know, it's that it's this continuation of the spirit of these stories that we've been telling for thousands of years. And I kind of came from this academic world of studying classical myths and, you know, Ovid's Metamorphoses and Homer's Odyssey and Iliad. And you're like, these stories about superpowered beings that are fallible, that have problems, that, you know, cheat on their wives and get into trouble and have all these mistakes. Like, there's a reason that we've been telling them for so long, because these stories have power. They make it easier to be human if you know that the gods can make mistakes.
Yeah, that's well said. Mine's just way more kind of mundane and specific. But I guess the thing that I'd love to talk about is a question would be, did you ever try to connect the mythology of the Celestials to Nowhere and the Celestial Head in Guardians?
Oh, man. That is
because the answer is
yes. Obviously, you made an attempt at that. We swung at that one. Well, great, guys. Hey, again, the movie is called Eternals. It's out right now in theaters. These are the writers, Ryan and Kaz. Ryan and Kaz, appreciate y'all coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Have a great day.
Oh, Brian, what have you done now?